What is going on, everybody? John Middlecoff, Three and Out Podcast. That's me. That's this great show. Coming to you live, kind of. I'm recording this live, but coming to you on draft week. The NFL is hosting the draft. Thank you, Jesus. Because there's, beside the MJ documentary, there's not much going on, you know, in this quarantine life. And I want to dive into something that, if you watch the MJ documentary, I think it was reported a little earlier before I jumped on here that about 6 million people watched. Yeah, I mean, there's only one NBA game this year that had more viewers. It was sweet. You know, it was really, really good. But there's something that really jumped out to me that I think parallels what every team is ultimately looking for on Thursday night of the draft, the first round. The game plan is going to be, I'll probably have to think about this. I probably record something late Thursday night for early Friday morning, just kind of live reaction to some of the draft. I'll have to think about how I'm exactly going to do it. I don't know what I did last week or last year. Maybe go through every pick. Maybe pick some main stories. I don't know. That'll be a project for me to think about all week and figure out what we're going to do. But we'll be live reacting to the draft. I'm going to be live on Twitter and Periscope for the entire draft. Basically, just a live broadcast. And it's going to look pretty sweet. It'll be fun. So at John Middlecoff, which is also my Instagram handle. But I'll be live on Twitter during the draft. Just live reacting and screwing around and having a good time. But we're going to dive into some MJ thoughts. Tua, to me, is one of the more polarizing players in recent memory. I got a couple thoughts on that. Some other stuff that's going on around the NFL. Some stories that I saw the last couple days. And then, of course, Middlecoff Mailbag at John Middlecoff is my Instagram. DM's wide open. Slide on in. You'll get your question read here on the show. Also, appreciate everyone that's gone to the 3 and Out, you know, Apple's, iTunes, and left a review. Just keep on doing that. 5 stars, you know, subscribe, tell your friends. And if you haven't, I would appreciate just, you know, leave a little positive review. You know, we try to keep it positive during quarantine. But I want to start with the MJ doc. And I think every sports team in a draft, especially in the first round, because at the end of the day in the first round of the NFL, but basketball and baseball, you're spending the most amount of money on a player. There's a reason you don't lose that much sleep about missing on a fifth-round pick. You're not guaranteeing any cash. It is a massive, massive acquisition for a franchise when you give, I think Kyler Murray got $34 million guaranteed last year. So you're talking about in the top 10, you know, guys making up to $20 million, 10th, 11th, 12th pick. Even in the 20s, you're talking, you know, $8, $9, $10 million guaranteed money. And, you know, unlike college football, where if you're at Texas or Ohio State, when I worked at Fresno State, Pat Hill used to always say about Pete Carroll, you know, he gets 20 first-round picks a year. We get some seventh-rounders. It's, you know, in college football, Ohio State, Alabama, LSU, every guy, they get the pick of the litter. And the great part about the pros is you only get one swing, right? And if you're a better team, you actually got to wait till you get your swing. So the importance of getting it right is obviously huge, and it sets back franchises. But I think we've seen over time. Now, Michael was really, really talented. By the time he was a junior, he was the third overall pick. And even they screwed up the second pick, Sam Perkins. Akeem Olajuwon's an all-time great prospect. At 7'1", to move like that, and even Rod Thorne, the general manager of the Bulls, who was interviewed on the doc, said, yeah, if I would have had the number one pick, I would have taken Akeem over Michael. It's really kind of crazy. No one's ever like, you know what, the Rockets really screwed that up. You know, he's like a 12-time All-Star, multiple-time Defensive Player of the Year, 2-time Finals MVP. He's not Michael Jordan, but there's only Bill Russell, Kareem. I mean, he gave Shaq the business. Now, Shaq was young, but Akeem's the top 3 or 4 center of all time. You know, but both those two guys, but Mike specifically, what really separated Mike was all the intangible stuff. Now, he, physical freak, 6'6", elite athlete, could jump out of the gym. But aren't just born a 50% jump shooter. His work ethic, his intangibles, and at the end of the day, his love of the game. And Bob McGinn, who I think does the best content for the NFL draft. It's the most realistic because he's just quoting scouts, right? And Nolan Naraki used to do the same thing. I don't even know if Nolan Naraki's still around. But it always makes the media so uncomfortable. I can't believe they said that about this kid. Well, yeah, someone told them that. They're shaping their information about what people tell them at the school. Because at the end, when you go to these draft rooms and you're sitting in front of your general manager and you're saying, I think we should take this guy with the 7th overall pick. The majority of the guys that are going to go in the first round have the talent. They have the size, the speed. If they're a receiver, the playmaking ability. If you're a pass rusher, the bend, the power, whatever. All the athletic attributes. Check, check, check. Most guys have a decent amount of that are going to get drafted high. Occasionally, a guy is overdrafted on talent. But I think the reason most guys fail is because of the intangible stuff. And the guys that become great players, like J.J. Watt. J.J. Watt's 6'4", 270, 265, and has some athletic gifts. But to me, what separated him once he got to the league was his just desire on every freaking play to play at 100. It was just nonstop motor. Now, again, he has physical attributes that are on the high end of his position. But his relentless nature as a player separated him. He never stopped. He was in elite shape. Well, you don't just show up on Sunday in elite shape. That's Monday through Saturday. Like, what makes Aaron Donald so dominant? He's 6'1". He has an elite first step. But he never stops playing hard. And if you're going to play that hard, you love the game 10 out of a 10. And to me, most guys that fail, and Bob McGinn wrote, like one guy that's kind of polarizing right now is Mekhi Becton, the big offensive tackle. And he wrote something like there are players that thinks he likes to cook more than he likes football. What ultimately they're saying is we don't know how much he likes football. And usually when guys fail, it's because, you know what, they don't really like football that much. And football, even unlike basketball, like Michael Jordan couldn't have loved the sport of basketball anymore. Competing and just playing the sport of basketball. On a scale of 100, he was at 100. Right? It doesn't get any stronger. Tom Brady would be 100. Peyton Manning would be 100. They would just be really, really high. Drew Brees, 100. Like they can't, because in football, you only play 16, 17, 18 games, depending if you play a couple playoff games. The majority of your time for the entire year is spent in meetings, is spent in the weight room, spent on the practice field. Like, it's not as even close. Even if you've played football, a flag football game, let alone high school, college, at any level, you know, the game is infinitely more fun than all the other stuff. But the other stuff is mandatory for you to be good. When you listen to Ed Reed talk, when you listen to Ray Lewis talk, when you listen to any of these great players talk in recent memory, they always talk about the preparation, the preparation, the preparation. And to be a great preparer, you have to just be addicted to the sport. It's why, honestly, like I'm better at media than I ever would have been long-term as a scout. And I was a good scout. Like I can isolate players. I can do that really well. I was a natural detective. But I didn't love, like I get bored watching 5th and 6th and 7th round players. I could have never been a GM. Because I would never have had the love to watch those type players. And that's what you have to have. I could pick 1st and 2nd rounders. Most guys can't. But I wouldn't have had the drive to do the stupid, what I'd looked at it, like kind of boring work. Where in the media, like getting ready for the show. Like I love getting ready for this podcast. I love doing I love the process of the stuff I do in the media much more than I loved the process of the stuff that I did in the NFL. Beside the big time players. I like that stuff. The top like 3 rounds. That was really fun for me. But like really spending a lot of time on undrafted free agents, that kind of bored me. So I'm lucky that I ended up in this profession because I'm more passionate about it. And clearly, if you listen to me, you know I'm pretty passionate about football. But that's the to be like Ozzie Newsome or Belichick or Veach and Andy or John Schneider and Pete Carroll or Kyle Shanahan, do you understand how addicted these humans are at football? Do you understand like the reason Richard Sherman is a Hall of Famer from the 5th round? because his love of football and his intangibles and desire to be great at the sport just couldn't be any stronger. And the reason why all these guys failed that are first-round picks over the years at corner at any position, because a lot of them that have the talent don't like playing the sport. They just don't, because the sport is really, really difficult. And you spend so much time preparing. And that's what's so hard about this draft, right? Because we talked about it the last couple weeks. Everyone's so excited when they draft a guy. I just drafted at 7th overall Isaiah Simmons. And whoever, let's say that would be the Carolina Panthers. But whoever drafts Isaiah Simmons, we'll see. I guess there's no draft rooms right now because everyone's on Zoom. But the GM will be fist pumping and the team Twitter account will be like, we nailed it. And it'll seem sweet. I'll be like, yeah, it's a good pick. Isaiah Simmons is going to be a Hall of Famer. Like, he's 6'4", he's a freak athlete. Do you know why he's going to be Hall of Famer? If he is one day, it'll be just because his drive and toughness and just desire to be an elite player outweigh his physical attributes. And his physical attributes are great. If that's the case, then they're in good shape. If it turns out, and again, this is what no one truly knows. Or, like, once he gets paid, does he truly care? Like, do you notice Michael Jordan was still kicking the shit out of people after he was worth hundreds of millions of dollars? Like, Tom Brady's still eating avocado ice cream. He's got 6 rings. Like, why do some of these guys, what is Drew Brees chasing? He's already won a Super Bowl. He's made unlimited amount of money. Why does he keep grinding? It's because it's like this intangible stuff that you cannot measure. And that is truly, and I remember at Fresno State, I was one of the pro liaisons. I always talked to the scouts. And then once I was on the other side, and I spent so much time when I was in the office reading the character reports, you just, even if you get the most in-depth, detailed character reports, you truly never know. Like, what truly is going to separate that guy once he gets to your building? How competitive he'll be. Now, you get a decent idea coming from these big programs, what Dabo and Saban and Urban Meyer and these coaches are telling you. But you still, there is just so much unknown. And it's where I think the media gets so uncomfortable when you start asking about their family and all this other stuff that you have to do. And even when you do it all, there's a chance. I mean, we know it. The numbers will tell us half these guys are going to fail. And I love the draft, and I freaking love the first round. But we'll all react the same way when all these guys are picked. Like, oh, they got their 10-year starter. Oh, they got their Pro Bowl wide receiver. Like, at the end of the day, Jerry Jeudy, Henry Ruggs, CeeDee Lamb, Justin Jefferson, Brandon Ayuk, T. Higgins. Like, think about what's made some of the great receivers right now in the NFL. Keenan Allen couldn't really run in college, but he can't be covered in the NFL. Why? Because his toughness is big time. He has no problem going over the middle. His competitiveness clearly is not an issue. And DeAndre Hopkins and Davante Adams, other slower guys. When, to me, like Keenan Allen, DeAndre Hopkins, and Davante Adams, 3 guys that you would not call speed demons by any means, they are so freaking competitive. Like, it just doesn't matter. They just got that dog in them. Like, obviously, Michael Jordan is the ultimate dog. Like, he'd play in the parking lot. When you want to take a guy in the first round, you want a guy that if the Super Bowl was played in the parking lot, he'd be the first guy there. And I think, like, it's easy to say, oh, should have seen it with J.J. Watt. But it's hard to. And you always question because you're dealing with 21, 22-year-old players, and you never truly know till you get them in their building. And then once you're in your building, the crazy part is you know pretty fast about their work ethic, about their drive, about their competitiveness. And I think half the coaches in the league a year in go, we got something here. And the other half are like, I sure hope this turns around because this is not ideal. One thing's pretty clear is that Tua's the most polarizing player in years. And a huge element of the reason he's become that is because of the injury situation and the quarantine status. Now, for the draft to take a huge step in terms of just be must-watch TV, sometimes you need a very, very famous player to slip a little bit. And for the draft to be powerful, in the NFL, you need some quarterbacks. And when a quarterback is really polarizing, to me, that's a good thing. A couple years ago, remember, it was Lamar Jackson. Fell to 32. And having a guy that's won a Heisman Trophy, I know Tua hasn't, but who has been on national TV that we all know is great for the draft. Because I'd say one of the biggest elements that the NBA, which has fallen off a cliff in terms of viewership and its popularity in the States, college basketball is irrelevant now. And when I was growing up, you watch college basketball because the star players, like Allen Iverson, went to college for multiple years. All the guys in the 90s and even the early 2000s were going to school for a couple years. So you followed them, and then you wanted to see where they were going to get drafted. Well, that's the one thing about college football that's probably never going to change because of the physical element of the sport of football, is a lot of these guys, like Isaiah Simmons, we've been watching him on Clemson for a couple years. Tua, Herbert, even Burrow. Now, he had one good year, but he'd been a starter for multiple years at LSU. Jordan Love, we've been hearing about for a year. Jerry Jeudy, CeeDee Lamb. Like, these guys have been on national television for years. So we've built up just a connection, good or bad, with a lot of these players. Now, the offensive lineman, kind of a geeky NFL thing, though everyone listening understands the importance of tackles. You just, when if Louisville came on, or Alabama came on, or Georgia came on, you weren't studying the pass sets of offensive linemen. You're probably watching more of the defensive linemen. It's why most people have a take on Chase Young. And as I talked about on the to open up the show, like Chase Young has an opportunity to be a Hall of Famer. His physical gifts speak for themselves. To me, it's all about the intangibles. If his intangibles and his desire and his drive, there'll be no stopping him. He'll be a consistent Pro Bowler. If he doesn't, he'll be an underachiever. It's really that simple, especially on the line of scrimmage because of the toughness aspect that comes on the line. With quarterback, it factors in a lot of different things. The mental element, I know there were some stories that he got a 13 on the Wunderlich test, two of that is. That was like his sophomore year. Then it turns out he got a 20. Whatever. When I watched him play, I thought his football IQ was pretty high. Looking off safeties, going through his reads. One thing I learned in the NFL, we don't care what your academic scores are. No one judges you off like, oh, you know, this guy was a 2.7 GPA. This guy was a 3.5 GPA. I mean, that may come up. But if this guy, yeah, he doesn't learn football well, that's a negative. If you're a 2.0 student, but you do well in terms of learning the playbook, that's all that matters. Took Jason Kidd like five times to get the minimum SAT to get into Cal. He's like one of the smartest basketball players ever. There is some innate football instincts that come with playing the position, even at quarterback. But when it comes to Tua, there is this question mark about his health. And the one thing I wondered, and this would make Twitter and the media, oh, they'd become so uncomfortable, and this got out. Hell, the league would probably do something, and you get in trouble. If I was the Miami Dolphins, if I was the LA Chargers, if I was any team that was interested in Tua, I would be in. I would imagine this has happened, and I wouldn't blame these teams for doing this. I would have tried to set up my doctor with Tua over the last month, because I could not draft him in the top 10 without getting my doctor's hands on him. I couldn't risk the investment. I would not do it. Now, would it be breaking the rules, and would it be? Would you get docked a first rounder if you got caught? Would the Twitter and the media freak out on you? Yeah. But at the end of the day, if you're the Miami Dolphins, you're the one giving them 4 years, $28 million, and using the fifth pick in the draft on them. So if it comes from pushing the envelope and doing something that's probably, you know, not the right thing to do, quote unquote, you notice a lot of businesses are pushing the envelope right now and doing different things because they're just trying to survive. Now, I'm not saying the Miami Dolphins or a team like that need to survive by getting their doctor to Tua, but I could not draft him without having my doctor have touched him. I couldn't go off whatever the medical was at the combine if my doctors weren't a part of that. So unless my doctor had seen Tua at the combine or done somehow made it to Tua over the last month and a half, he wouldn't be a draft option for me if I was an owner. We would not invest that type of money on a risk being that high. And that's why I think what's so kind of intriguing about Thursday night is I don't think it's out of the realm of possibility. Let's assume that no teams, which I think was kind of crazy, but let's just assume the best of the NFL, no teams mess with Tua. No teams have gotten a physical on him the last month. I think it would be a little naive to think that just with the way NFL teams and the way, I mean, the NFL teams are owned by, you know, now there are some slappy owners, but they're also cutting edge multi-billion dollar guys that live on the edge, right? They push the envelope in everything they do. So if I think we'd all be kind of, you know, living in the dark a little bit if we don't think some things have happened over the last month that, you know, would be frowned upon by the general public. But let's say that information, either they got it or they don't have it. What if Tua starts falling like a rock? And to me, if he does, it would be very, very evident immediately that he has some medical issues that give teams, that terrify teams. Because I think we've seen two players that over the last two decades, coming into like the last 5 years, never would have been drafted where they were drafted. Not in a million years Baker Mayfield would have gone above guys like Sam Darnold 15 years ago. A six-foot quarterback that can't move, that's a multiple-time walk-on, no chance. Kyler Murray, who's a much better physical, has better physical tools than Baker, right? He's an elite athlete. He's got a big-time arm, but he's like 5'8". Like, that's, you could argue that guy going at quarterback is even crazier than Baker, because at least we have a recent example of a short, accurate quarterback, pocket quarterback, having success in Drew Brees. There's never been anyone like Kyler Murray. I mean, Michael Vick, but Michael Vick had Kyler Murray, and Michael Vick was short by about 3 inches. So, and Michael Vick had started multiple years. Kyler Murray was a one-year starter in college football. I know he started a little bit as a true freshman at A&M on and off the field. Maybe he didn't start that year, but he definitely played. But, I mean, a one-year true starter, like that's... Now, and I think Kyler Murray's actually going to be pretty good, but think how bold that move is. But there weren't any questions like, does he have a degenerate hip? Are his ankles going to hold up? Like, he actually got a clean bill of health. It made everyone pretty comfortable drafting him. Where Tua, you go, well, he's short. Like Baker, he's not a great athlete. Now, he is really accurate, but then when you factor in the injuries, is it worth taking that guy in the first round? Is it worth taking that guy definitely in the top 10? I think it's okay to ask those questions. Now, if he had never been hurt, I think given that those two guys went number one overall, Tua would have been a lock to go really high because he was kicking everyone's butt. He was super accurate. Now, he's also playing with, you know, what turns out in college version, like four Jerry Rices. Ruggs, Judy, both going to go in the top 15. Depending on who you ask, Smith and Waddle, Waddle might be the best of the group, and Devontae Smith's a baller too. You're talking about four guys that in a two-year span will all get drafted potentially in the top 15 of their two respective drafts. That's pretty nuts, right? I mean, Joe Burrow, yeah, he played with the little running backs a stud. Justin Jefferson's probably a fringe first-rounder. Ja'Marr Chase going to go in the first round. Tua played with four guys that are going to go really high. Like, that might be the greatest college wide receiving class in the history of the sport when you factor in their draft slots. We'll have to look back in a year. But if you tell me Judy and Ruggs both go top 15 this year, and then let's say Waddle goes top 10 and Devontae Smith goes like 16 next year, you get two guys, let's say go 11 and 13 and 7 and 16. Like, that would be the craziest four, you know, stretch of four players probably in the history. That might never happen again. I think that's not a criticism of Tua, but that's something that in draft rooms you go, well, I don't know, our receivers relative to who we're playing in the NFL aren't this good. They're not getting open with as much ease. Is he going to be able to do this? But big picture, just for our interest, us watching, I think it makes this draft, like Tua being polarizing player, makes me can't wait to watch what happens. I'm actually expecting at this point in time for him to fall. I don't think... Again, I don't have any like inside information. I'm just going to go educated guess. And again, maybe I'm believing too much smoke. But I think it gets to the point where there's enough smoke, there has to be a little fire. That if all of a sudden, I don't think we're going to get to have an Aaron Rodgers, like he would go in the 20s. Like, but I could see him maybe getting to the teens and either a team taking him there, a team trading up to get him. But I think he feels like right now, from at this time last year, right, being a lock, I'd say he was a lock number one overall pick to now being a guy that might fall in the draft like a rock. It kind of was make the NFL draft a lot of fun. Okay, before we get to the Middlecoff mailbag, let's touch on a couple things. One story today, I don't even know if it's a story. Tony Khan, the son of Shad Khan, the guy that owns the Jaguars, so he basically owns the team, the son of the guy that owns the team, but when you're the heir to the team, it's your team too. He is a major part. He's not technically the GM, but works in the front office. He's tweeting back and forth with Yannick Ngakoue. Listen, you know, I get Yannick's really mad, wants to be traded. I don't care how many times your player that you're about to trade tweets at you, don't tweet back at him. Like, the players, like, I'm not judging Yannick and Ndakwe for trying to get out of there. The Jaguars, you could argue, are the biggest joke franchise right now in the NFL. Anytime they get a good player, they trade him away, or he wants out. Jalen Ramsey gone. They trade about to trade Yannick Ndakwe, the best second best player they've had in the last, you know, handful of years. Leonard Fournette. Can you imagine drafting Leonard Fournette, number 4 overall, in a draft with guys like Christian McCaffrey, Dalvin Cook, and Alvin Kamara? Imagine looking at yourself in the mirror as the cons and going, we took Leonard Fournette. Yet nobody wants Leonard Fournette. You know what I've heard about Leonard Fournette? Kind of a pain in the ass to coach. Not exactly Christian McCaffrey or Dalvin Cook. Doesn't exactly light up the room. You can't trade him. He has no value. Makes too much money between the tackle running back. I mean, he's like a vet minimum player. I mean, he's probably better than that, but give me a break. I mean, I'm so tired of reading stories about the Jacksonville Jaguars. Like, Tony, the guy follows me on Twitter. I don't know him. I mean, I follow him too, but to be tweeting back and forth with the guy on your own team about, it's just so counterproductive, so unprofessional, so low level. You know, if like the team that I think about and talk about the most, like if John Lynch or Jed York, I would eviscerate them. Can you imagine Belichick or the Steelers or the Eagles tweeting back and forth with a player? I mean, that's embarrassing. It's just no wonder you guys suck. The Giants leaked out today that they're doing their due diligence on Justin Herbert, like Gettleman. Like, I get you want it out there to try to drive up some price for your pick, but no one believes that you're going to take Justin Herbert. You just took in one of the craziest draft day picks in a while, probably since Blake Bortles went 3 overall to, of course, the crappy Jaguars. You took Daniel Jones last year at 6 overall. You benched Eli Manning for him. Eli then retired. Daniel Jones is your starting quarterback for the foreseeable future. No one believes that you would draft Justin Herbert. Not a soul on Twitter, not a soul in the league, not Justin Herbert believes that you would take him. I'm all for, like, you know, we're in this, like, if the Lions wanted to leak out. You know, Stafford's been hurt. He's getting a little older. We might take Tua. You know, I wouldn't, like, yeah, I don't know if that adds up, but it would be somewhat believable. Nobody, and I repeat, nobody believes the Giants would take Justin Herbert. What I don't get about the Chargers is Anthony Lynn is kind of risking his career too. Now we'll see if when the dust settles they end up with one of the quarterbacks, but it kind of feels that there's a chance they don't take one of the top quarterbacks. They just take like an offensive tackle. Anthony Lynn, he told Peter King this, and he's been saying this really since the season ended and Rivers was going to, we knew he was going to bounce, is that he believes Tyrod Taylor's a starting quarterback. And Tyrod's a good guy. I remember evaluating him when I first got into the league, and he was a backup to Joe Flacco. And I was like, he was pretty talented. And he's not a bad backup. He can win you a game or two if he's got to be the backup. And if he's your starter, I know he had the 1 year where they made the playoffs, but they scored 3 points in a playoff game. Like, he's not good enough to do anything. And if you're the Chargers with this roster, at this point in time in your franchise, going into LA, like, you got a chance to kind of make some noise. Like, you could win a couple playoff games if you got some decent quarterback play. Tyrod Taylor can't be your starting quarterback. Anthony Lynn, like, if you bank the farm and you go, listen, guys, let's take an offensive tackle, let's roll into the season with Tyrod Taylor, and you go 7-9 and 8-8 with that roster, you will be fired. And you will never become a head coach again. Because people go, you tied your wagon to Tyrod freaking Taylor? Again, good backup, high character guy, you know, guy you want in your quarterback room. He's a legitimate NFL player. You know, he's probably one of the 50 best quarterbacks in the NFL, but he's not, like, you can't make him your starting quarterback. So either go sign Cam, draft a guy, but you cannot start week one with Tyrod Taylor as your guy. It does feel like there's going to be some veterans traded. Trent Williams, who I think we forgot about because he literally did not play in 2019. I will be pretty shocked that if on either Thursday or Friday we don't see a trade involving Trent Williams. And it'll be fascinating, like, if you're a team like the Jets, would you rather just take Jerry Jeudy at 11 and trade a third-round pick if you could do that for Trent Williams? Like, I might. He's only 31 years old. I might think about doing something like that. You kind of get to double dip. You know, instead of using the pick on tackle, like take a sweet wide receiver to go with Sam Darnold and trade for Trent Williams. Joe Thuney, are you telling me that Belichick's going to pay a guard $14.5 million? I know he franchised Logan Mankins once upon a time, and when you factor in inflation, that would have been like 2011. I forget the exact number that he played for, but he was, you know, a really, really good player. I just, Joe Thuney, I can't see it. It's just not going to happen. I would expect him to be traded on either Thursday or Friday. Andy Dalton, kind of a bizarre, I mean, it felt like he was as good as gone when the season ended and it was clear Joe Burrow was going to go number one. But of course, Mike Brown, who I don't know if you guys saw, but they did like a mock draft in the NFL today where they ran through it to just try to go through technologically, get everyone up to speed on how it was going to work. And there was a glitch when the Bengals picked. Of course there was, you know, did Mike Brown's internet go out? Of course it would be the Bengals. But just trade Andy Dalton. If you can just get rid of him for like a fourth or fifth round pick, just wave the white flag. Move on, sign Joe Burrow or draft Joe Burrow and just start your franchise up anew. Just do that for everybody. Why does this always got to be so complicated with the Bengals? Okay, let's fire into the Middlecoff mailbag. See which one of you guys send me some DMs. I got a lot here. You think Tua is a sleeper for the Raiders? Mike Lombardi mentioned it in his podcast, and I feel like he still knows people in the Raiders organization. He just wouldn't say it for no reason. If the Raiders take a quarterback, which I don't think is out of the realm of possibility, I know Mayock and Gruden have spoken glowingly about Carr, and I don't think they don't like Carr, but I don't think they love Carr. And people I know in the NFL believe that they're not that high on Carr. Definitely not the way they speak about him. I think if they go with a quarterback, I think they go with Jordan Love. And whether that's either trading up for Jordan Love and kind of viewing him as their Patrick Mahomes or just waiting till 12 and taking him there. Now, I don't necessarily, I think it's probably, you know, 30-40% they pull the trigger on that. But eventually, John Gruden's got to go, the only way I can beat the Chiefs is with a dynamic quarterback. And eventually, I need to get, or maybe 12, trade 12 and 19. What if John Gruden called the Detroit Lions? I'll give you 12 and 19 for pick 3. Would the Lions do that? They might, you know. I mean, they get two sweet starters, and John Gruden gets Justin Herbert. What do you think is the biggest scandal that isn't talked about in society or in football? That's a deep question. I'd have to think about that. Deepest scandal that isn't talked about. I mean, there's some shady shit that goes on in America, baby. I don't know. Over the past several years, I heard so many comps upcoming draft quarterbacks to Alex Smith. Is it because he was drafted really high and had a good but not great career? Is it like saying, hey, this quarterback can get you to the playoffs, but don't expect much more after that? That's a good question. Personal fellow Cal Poly alum. I love it. Yeah, I think it has to do more with a solid athlete with an average arm. And I think a lot of guys are like that. You know, solid athlete with a lot of arm. And I think Alex's career speaks to the point of who's coaching you, who's on your team is so important. When he had Mike Nolan and Mike Singletary, I mean, Mike Singletary is one of the worst coaches ever. Think about this. Mike Singletary, I'd say, is a worse coach than Jim Tom Sula. Think about that. Mike Nolan was just completely over his head. Then when he got Jim Harbaugh and Andy Reid, like, Alex Smith's pretty good. Even with Jay Gruden. I think they were 6-2 before his leg fell off. Like, Alex Smith's fine. You can win a lot of games with Alex Smith. The reality is to win a Super Bowl, you need Mahomes, you need Favre, you need Peyton, you need Brady. You know, Eli got hot. It's just really hard to win the Super Bowl. Why is there such a discrepancy between the previous NFL football championships and Super Bowls? Why do teams only get credit for Super Bowl wins? And why is that the measure of success for a franchise? Well, I think that's the goal. I mean, at the end of the day, you start the season to win the Super Bowl. Like, that is the point of sports. I think sometimes we forget this. with the explosion of media and the Bleacher Reports and like how cool all this shit is. The point of sports is to win games. This, you play, as Herm Edwards said, to win the game. I think the football championship, like, I wouldn't consider myself a football historian pre like 1967, but there were two separate leagues. It was the NFL and the AFL. So winning a Super Bowl, you just had way more teams in the same league. You were competing against the country, right? You just added, I'd have to go to the Wikipedia of the 1967 merger. Probably be a good quarantine experiment for me just to read some history books on the NFL. But the league merged, so you're beating everybody, right? When the NFL and AFL merged, I think that's why Super Bowls are so highly thought of. But winning championships is the goal, because pro football is a business. But if you win and win championships, you make more money. Look at the most successful franchises and the ones that make the most money. Yankees, 27 championships. Lakers, I don't know the exact number. It's too many, but it's like 18 or 20 or whatever it is. It's a lot. Patriots, most successful team in the last decade or two decades. Six Super Bowls. Look at the other big teams in the league. The Niners, they got five. The Steelers, the Packers have been to a bunch and, you know, have a long history of winning. Like, the whole point is to win. The MJ documentary. The Bulls won six championships in 8 years. Right? The Warriors became this big deal. They won 3 in 5 years. I just think it's measured because that's the whole goal of everything. Like, we're trying to be a champion. Whether you coach high school football, whether you coach college football, the goal is to win. Win every game. And if you win every game, you're going to win a championship. And I mean, you don't necessarily have to win every game, but like, this was the LSU's most successful season of all time. They went 15-0. They beat the crap out of everybody. They shattered records. To me, that's the point of sports. Appreciate all the content you guys are turning out. I'm a bit torn on the Niners' upcoming draft and can see both sides of the argument, but would love to get your take. On one hand, the absence of a pick in rounds 2 through 4 make all the talk about trading down at least once in round 1 logical. The more swings you can take throughout, the better. With that being said, this roster is dramatically different spot now than it was 3 years ago from a depth standpoint. There's no way there are going to be 5 or 6+ rookies that are going to be able to make the team. So with that, I think you could lean toward the quality over quantity theory and the argument of retaining those premium picks at 13 and 31. Any thoughts? I agree with you at 13. I think I saw John Lynch spoke today to the media, and he said they have 6 or 7 players that they have no problem taking at 13. I think it's pretty easy to theorize who those guys are, right? Probably Judy, Ruggs, C.J. Henderson, I guess maybe Xavier McKinney. I could see them liking him a lot. I saw that Kwaski Tartt, who's going in the last year of his contract, might be in the trading block. Maybe like a Javon Kinlaw. You know, there's a group of guys that are worth taking. At 31, it's a little riskier because you're paying first-round money for a guy that you might not have graded in the first round. So I got no problem taking 31. Now, I don't like going far, but going 31 to 40. Because the other thing at 40 is you get a cheap asset. And part of this team is they got expensive players, right? Armstead makes a lot. DeFord makes a lot. McGlinchey's about to get paid. Not too much, but he'll get a contract extension. Fred Warner's going to get paid next year. Jimmy Ward just got paid. Bosa, I mean, was the number 2 overall pick in the draft, makes good money. Jimmy makes a lot of money. They're going to need to buy some players next year in free agency. Richard Sherman's going to be a free agent after this season. So part of building a football team, even when the roster looks as deep as the Niners, I mean, hell, Robbie Gould makes like $5 million a year. He's a kicker. So you do have to plan big picture, and the finances play such a big part in it. But I agree. I don't think the Niners need like 10 picks. But I would use 13 on a player, given that group of players, whatever that is, the guys they like. And I have no problem taking one at 31, but I feel better about taking... John Snyder says it great every year. Like, no team has 32 first-rounders on their big board. Usually, in a good draft, it's like low 20s. In a shitty draft, it's like 15. But it's never 31. So getting from 31 to like 36 is a huge difference in how much money you pay a player. That to me is a huge factor. Any idea what the Jets should do with Jamal Adams? If they use him as trade bait, what would a reasonable haul be? And if they re-sign him, what contract does a top-tier safety deserve to get? Well, I think the problem with Jamal Adams, and I'm a big Jamal Adams fan, is I don't think you'd call him a great cover safety. He's a monster in the box. He's like a more fluid Cam Chancellor. But what made Cam Chancellor great is he had Earl Thomas, Richard Sherman, Bobby Wagner, and a sweet defensive line. The Jets have none of that. So you draft him 6 overall, and then he's really good. You can't just give him away for like pick 24. But who's trading a lot for Jamal Adams and then having to pay him? I think you get in this tricky situation where it doesn't really behoove you to trade him. Now, I would trade him for like a first and a second round pick. I don't know if anyone team's given that up. I think a lot of teams like the 20s, like if I'm the Niners, I'd give 31 for him right now. But I don't think the Jets wouldn't do that. What are you going to pay him? You know, are you going to pay him $15, $16 million a year? Like, eventually he'll get that. I think it's just a very tricky situation. I don't know if there's a right or wrong answer. I do know this. Jamal Adams, I know he hasn't won, but it's not his fault. Good teams can win with Jamal Adams. Like, winning teams will like Jamal Adams. Like, if I was, I don't know, the you know, I'm trying to think, like the Packers, would they take Jamal Adams, put him with Savage? Actually, Savage is probably a strong safety, too. The Patriots, I mean, they got a couple safeties. Yeah, I mean, maybe it's, the Jets would never trade him there. It'd probably be a little more complicated to trade him than just be like, oh, Jamal Adams is sweet, because he is sweet. But it's easier said than done to move on a player like that. Hey, John, recently started my own football podcast. Do you have any tips for a beginner? Thanks so much, Let Three and Out Podcast and Haberman and Milkoff. I appreciate it. Yeah, my advice would just be try different things out. You know, you always got to be evolving. But the faster you just start recording stuff and putting it out and just trying to push it, trying to get people to listen. You know, I had built-in advantages when I got in the podcast game first. When me and Guy started our other podcast, we had a radio show for 4 years. So we had a built-in audience. And then this, I had Colin. So I've started podcasts from scratch, but I had built-in audiences. So I don't, and then you're just always trying to grow it. Try to do good content. You know, I'm not that controversial. Like, I'm not saying crazy things, trying to get people to go viral. I just try to do a good podcast and people will like it. Now, obviously, I try to pick the right topics and I try to be entertaining, but just do a good show. And I think if you do a good show, people will find you. Eventually, but it's, if you're starting from scratch, it'd be a little difficult. But the faster you can get content out there, the better. I know the Bucks are in win now mode, but if Jordan Love falls to them, does it make sense for them to draft him and try to trade for Trent Williams? If he falls to them in the second round, I can't take him at pick 14. To me, at pick 14, you take a defensive difference maker, you take an offensive line difference maker, you can't take Jordan Love. Now, I think if you're in Jason Light's position as the general manager, you know, it's, you always got to be thinking big picture. But the moment you sign Tom Brady, the goal is to make the Super Bowl this year. The goal is to win the NFC. Not just to make the playoffs, but to win the NFC. Because that's going to be Tom's goal. That's going to be Bruce Arians' goal, to win the NFC. So I think that's what complicates the situation. But, yeah, I mean, if they don't take a tackle at 14, I have no problem trading for Trent Williams. Avid New York Giant fan in Arizona. I happen to think Joe Judge is building the team the right way and think he's added certain fits for free agents. Other than Colt McCoy, I'm satisfied. What do you think? I'm trying to think. Well, Joe Judge is in charge of free agency. They did have James Bradbury, the corner from the Panthers, but that's who drafted him, Dave Gettleman. I'm trying to think off the top of my head, who else did they sign? I'll be honest, I'm not... I think the Giants are a ways away. I mean, I think they got a little ways to go. To me, the key for anything is going to be Daniel Jones. If he is a top 12, 13 quarterback in the NFL, they got a chance to turn it around relatively fast. I'd say realistically in 2020, 7 wins would be a good year for Joe Judge and the Giants. And more than likely, they don't win 7 games. The other big question mark is, when's the last time Jason Garrett called plays? Jason Garrett is Joe Judge's offensive coordinator. Is he just going to run some dynamic offense? I mean, he's got Saquon. I guess they might trade Evan Ingram, Daniel Jones. Let's say they draft an offensive lineman with pick 4 overall. They got Golden Tate. I mean, they got a ways to go, man. I had a question for the Middlecoff mailbag. How come the Cowboys won't just let Dak test the open market and match whatever deal the other team gives him. There's no way in hell another team gives him $30 million at most, especially now. I think the problem with that line of thinking, even though I don't necessarily disagree, is at the moment you do it, you're basically just waving the middle finger at him. Even though it's just smart business, you don't really treat your quarterback like that. And I think Dak would go, well, you didn't make Dak do that. You didn't really, I guess you kind of made Amari do that, but you still gave him $60 million. Now, I know Ron Rivera has gone on record, like they tried to sign Amari. So maybe they did get the price driven up, but they didn't make Zeke do that. They didn't make Jalen Smith last year do that. They didn't make DeMarcus Lawrence hit free agency. I think making Dak hit free agency when he's your quarterback just can make things a little tricky and emotional. Though, and now he's got nowhere to go. But if you had done that in free agency, as a wise man once told me, if you let a player hit free agency, you have to be prepared for him not coming back. And for the Cowboys clearly don't want to give him $35 million a year. Don't blame him at all. But they were not prepared to lose Dak Prescott, reason why they franchised him. And that's why they're at where they're at. And now they're just too late in the process. You're just going to play probably on the franchise tag if they don't get a contract extension. Okay, I guess the next time I talk to you will be the Friday after the NFL draft. Again, I will be on Twitter and Periscope during the draft from 5 to 8:30 or whenever the draft's going on. At John Middlecoff, my Twitter account, same as my Instagram account. I'll be on live for 3.5 hours. BSing, talking about all sorts of crap. So find me there. Hope everyone's staying safe. And looking forward to talking to you guys soon. Peace!